So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Well, maybe not Les Thatcher, but Doc Young is here. Les is unfortunately running late. He's at the Cauliflower Alley convention that goes on every year. And, well, his plane's running a bit late, so he's not going to be able to make it tonight. But we do have, as our special co-host tonight, my good friend, from the Figure Four Weekly Newsletter, Brian Alvarez, on the program. Brian, thanks for being my special co-host this week.
Thanks for having me on to play Les.
You get to be Les tonight.
That's right.
So you're going to have to get a little cranky. And
that'll be easy.
You'll have to make fun of me a couple times.
Sure.
But we got a great show for you guys tonight. Of course, we've got the pre-recorded conference from this afternoon, took place this afternoon, the TNA conference with Kevin Nash. He answered a lot of good questions, including, what does he think of the DX reunion? What does he think about ECW? He talks a lot about his plans for TNA. All that good stuff is coming up on the show. We're going to play that press conference in its entirety. And also, we've got, of course, the man, Mean Gene Okerlund, is going to be on the program tonight live, and we're going to be asking questions from the chat room to Mean Gene. So
I hear you're a big fan of Mean Gene.
I am a huge fan of Mean Gene. Mean Gene is my hero. And
you know, I always liked Mean Gene. I always thought he was a good announcer and everything like that. And they announced him for the Hall of Fame this year. And before the Hall of Fame, they showed a Mean Gene like highlight video.
Right.
And I was like, my God, did this man deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. This video was so great, and it reminded me of so many great Mean Gene moments. So hopefully this will be fun.
He's the man. I'm going to mark out. I might get all quiet and be like, Gene, can I please ask you a question, Mr. Okerlund?
Giggle.
Yeah, something like that. Can you, like, sign my sock?
That's right.
Something like that. Let's get into some of the news that's been going on this week. Actually, today... And this is, I'm going to talk about this at the top of the show. Axel Rotten has finally turned up.
He did?
Yes, we know Axel has, he no-showed ECW, or actually he no-showed Raw a couple weeks ago. He was supposed to be in the ECW faction. I seriously doubt he's going to be on the ECW program tonight. But here's what it says on his blog, and I don't know if you've seen this or not.
Yes, I did.
Okay. On Axel Rotten's MySpace today, it says, I'm fine, I'm at my house, I've been here all week, all is well. If you want to reach me, you have my number, feel free to call. By the way, I do have the right to be left alone for a while. As far as wrestling, no comment.
I think the chances of him being involved are very, very slim, because Raw was not the first event that he no-showed. He actually no-showed several.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Raw may have been the last straw, and the way that the ECW invasion has sort of gone over the last week or so, you've got a couple of ECW alumni, but mostly it's WWE guys. It's going to be a new ECW. They've said it many, many times, but it's going to be. And they've got Sandman. They've got Balls Mahoney. They probably don't need Axel Rotten there.
Right.
And I think after the no-shows, it's probably pretty unlikely that he'll be involved.
Yeah, I do wish Axel the best, and hopefully whatever he's going through right now, I hope he overcomes it. Here's something that I really wanted to talk to Les about tonight, but the former WWF enhancement talent, Johnny Canine,
Yes.
If you remember, had some murder charges brought against him. He was arrested last, I believe, January in Ontario, Canada, with the connection of the murder of Fred and Lynn Gilbank 6 years ago. Well, as far as, I believe, the other day, yesterday, the murder charges against Johnny Canine were dropped.
I vaguely remember this story. I don't remember all the details, but I remember writing about it about a year ago. And it was a pretty big story, and the charges have been dropped. I don't know what ended up happening, but, yeah, I think Les would be the guy to talk about because he probably knows more about Johnny Canine's career. I think he worked Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and he did some stuff for WWE, some
yes.
enhancement deals. But he was a guy that was just a character. I mean, more so than just being a guy involved in professional wrestling. He had quite the he lived quite the life. And that story came out last year, and I guess, you know, I don't know what the circumstances were as to why charges were dropped, but apparently they were.
Okay. He was actually Bruiser Bedlam.
Yes.
In Smoky Mountain, and he was managed by Jim Cornette. Well, I guess, you know, the only reason I can see for dropping the charges is that, well, he didn't do it.
That could be as well.
Sad news happened this week. John Tenta, last Wednesday, passed away after a very public and long battle with bladder cancer.
Yeah, John Tenta, we had Buddy Wayne on our show last Thursday, and he'd done a lot of work for WWE and WCW and that sort of thing, enhancement work, and I asked him if he'd ever met John Tenta, and he actually knew him dating all the way back to the 80s, when he was a fan in the front row at the Cloverdale Fairgrounds. John Tenta, of course, had a sumo career, and then after that got into wrestling. So this was the period between sumo and wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And he said a lot of people in this business pass away, and shortly after they pass away, you hear everybody going, oh, he was such a great guy and that sort of thing. He said John Tenta is one of those guys that it's totally true. Just a very, very nice guy. There was a period they were both, I believe, in WCW, and Buddy was going to get a draw, and John just gave him the money and said, don't worry about it. And, you know, he'd been a fixture of the WrestleCrap website for the past several years.
Yes, I was a big lurker on the John Tenta forums.
Yes, he obviously, you know, he had a lot of wacky gimmicks. He was the Shark, he was Golga, Earthquake, that sort of thing, and so... You know, WrestleCrap had features on John Tenta.
Right.
And he took it all, you know, he had a great sense of humor about it. And when he first went on the website, you know, years back, you know how the internet is.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, you know, no one knows who you are. You can say whatever.
Right.
A lot of guys said a lot of things about him, and he laughed about it. And he took everything in stride, and he had this battle with cancer that he'd been fighting. Just fighting it for years and always positive about it. And it's very sad because he's one of those guys like Owen Hart where it's a guy who died young. Everybody said great things about him. And he died young, and it was nothing he brought on himself, which is usually the case with guys dying young in pro wrestling. So
right. John Tenta, he was, from what I gathered from the boards, I looked at all his posts for the last couple of years at least, was a really nice guy, really
yeah.
great guy, and I'm not just saying that because he's passed away. I mean, he really was, you know, like a big teddy bear kind of guy.
Yeah.
And, man, the world's really lost out.
And he had a good career. I can remember when I was first getting into wrestling, I was not a Hulkamaniac in any way, and my sister was. And I remember when Earthquake sat on Hulk Hogan on the Brother Love show and put Hogan out of action.
Yes.
And my sister was heartbroken, and she wrote letters to Hulk Hogan, and she was one of the 300,000 Hulkamaniacs or whatever they claim that wrote letters in, and I was a big fan of Earthquake that day.
Did you write Earthquake letters?
I should have. I should have. Thank
going.
You. Thank you for sitting on Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, that's a lot of people's best memory of John Tenta and his work. I was more interested in actually his WCW run when he was John Tenta for a short time. When you finally got to see the guy behind Earthquake and the guy behind Golga, and he just didn't have a gimmick. He was just John.
Yeah, he was in the Dungeon of Doom, and he was the Shark. And then I just remember he cut that great promo where he said, I am not a fish. and he renounced the gimmick. And that was pretty much the, you know, he had a short career there before going back as Golga and the Oddities, but he worked all over, made some money, and had a good career, so look at it in a positive way, I guess, from that aspect.
Sure. And, yeah, he did have a great career and a great life, albeit a very short one. We wish, of course, we send out some sincere condolences to the family and the friends of John Tenta.
And there is a, by the way, I should do this plug as well, the WrestleCrap board, or actually I don't know if it's the board, just the entire website, there is a fund that is being set up. You can donate. All the proceeds are going to Tenta's family, so if you're interested in doing that, you can head over to WrestleCrap.com.
Absolutely. Let's get into it. Let's go to let's get into One Night Stand. I don't know if you know this, but we play the prediction game, myself and Les do, every time there's a pay-per-view coming up, and we give our predictions on who's going to win and lose the matches. And then we add them up, and we see who won. It's a fun little thing, and I usually always win, and it gives me a chance to stick it to Les, you know, a little bit. So we're going to go over what happened, of course, on ECW's One Night Stand on Sunday, and find out the predictions, find out who won the prediction game from last week. Let's see, at the start, it was Taz defeating Jerry the King Lawler. Myself and Les both went with Taz on that one, so we got 1 point apiece on that one. Really short match, but it's sort of...
I don't know if you can really call it a match.
Yeah.
It was a wacky storyline. Joey Styles got involved, jumped on Lawler's back, Lawler went for the pile driver, and then Taz just choked him out. That was that.
Yeah, it sort of showed at the very beginning, you know, that you don't know what's going to happen tonight. Anything can happen.
Yeah,
they gave that off.
I think also, you know, if you saw the head-to-head special, when those guys brawled, it was like two old men playing announcer that were brawling. And believe me, this went exactly as long as it needed to go. If this had gone any longer, it would have been a disaster. And really, it went the perfect length because I think that's really all the fans wanted to see as well. So it was a success.
Yeah. I would agree. Kurt Angle beat Randy Orton, which was a surprise to me, but not to Les. Les went with Kurt Angle. I have no idea why I went with Randy Orton, but Les gets another point for that one.
I would have unfortunately picked Kurt Angle as well to win. I just, you know, Orton's coming back off of a suspension, and I think the deal is he's got to do a few jobs now that he's returned. He's got to pay his penance. And Angle's the guy that's being pushed as the top star of the brand. So, you know, he's going to be unbeatable, I think, for a while.
Yeah, probably. The FBI defeated Super Crazy and Tajiri, which wasn't a match that was announced when we played the prediction game, so there was no points there.
Well, it's sort of, it may have been announced. We actually learned about that match on ShopZone.com. It was on the back of a T-shirt. On ShopZone, that's how everybody figured out about this match.
Mm-hmm.
And the best part was, as soon as everybody found out that this match was on the back of a T-shirt, they pulled the link.
Yes.
So you could actually not see the T-shirt. This was apparently a concern that a build match for a pay-per-view 4 days later had been released on the Internet. Whereas I was watching the Pride show a week and a half ago, and I saw DX commercials everywhere a week and a half before they reunited,
right.
But apparently that wasn't a major deal.
Right.
Or WWE Magazine coming out with the DX stuff a week and a half before they reunited.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So who knows? I guess they didn't want anybody to know that the FBI was going to be there. It was
you never know how that might spoil a show.
It was a big secret.
It was. A secret match.
World champion Rey Mysterio and Sabu wrestled to a no contest. Which means, in my land, no points. I had went with Sabu on this one. I had said, you know, Sabu is going to win this title. He's going to take it to ECW. And Les went with Ray.
I don't know what I would have predicted going into this, because I would not have seen Sabu winning the belt, because the whole pay-per-view really was built around Rob Van Dam's title shot. But I guess I probably would have predicted Ray. I certainly would not have predicted a no contest in an ECW match, but...
yeah, absolutely.
I'm not a writer.
Edge and Mick Foley and Lita defeated Terry Funk, Tommy Dreamer, and Beulah. This one was changed at the last minute. They threw in Lita and Beulah on there. After we had played the prediction game last Tuesday. But Mick and Edge and Lita did get the win, I had went with Mick and Edge. Les had went with Funk and Dreamer and Beulah.
Yeah, that was quite a match. I think that was probably the most violent match WWE has ever promoted. Barbed wire, I mean real barbed wire, where men were sticking to the barbed wire.
Yeah, it got pretty nasty out there.
Yeah, it was very bloody, very... It was just, it's hard to rate a match like that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was just such a garbage match. I mean, there was sharp stuff and fire and everything, but, I mean, just watching it was such a spectacle that it's, like, probably the one match next year that you'll remember when you think back.
Right.
And I really think it's sort of a running gag for the past almost 30 years, but I think Terry Funk needs to hang it up after this one.
Yeah.
Because... He's never going to have a match this good again.
And I would suggest no more matches like this for Mick Foley either. It pains me to see both of them get in the ring and still do this.
Well, what do you think of the idea of Flair and Foley in a Best of Three Falls wrestling match at the next pay-per-view?
I love it. It's going to give Ric Flair the edge, but I'm looking forward to this one.
I like the idea on paper.
Mm.
I'm just worried that... You know, you've got 2 weeks to get Foley and Ric Flair in shape. Foley's a large man. Flair's been on vacation in his honeymoon for like 2 weeks. I just hope they can go three falls. You know what I mean?
Right.
So.
That's the first thing I thought of. Mick Foley going three falls? Wow.
Yeah.
Because the guy, you know, he tends to run out of gas, but he's going to have to really... work out for the next 2 weeks and work on that cardio, man.
That's right.
And unless one or two of these falls go through right away, it's going to be a long, brutal match for these guys.
It's intriguing. Yes. I'll give it that.
Mm-hmm. Balls Mahoney defeated Masato Tanaka. This was another match that wasn't announced yet, so there was no points on this one.
It was just a match. Nothing to speak of.
And of course, the big finale and the big surprise was Rob Van Dam defeating John Cena, and he's the new WWE champion.
I think I would have predicted just the old disputed finish. That's what I figured they were going to do. And they sort of did it, but it was a disputed finish where, I mean, there was a clear-cut winner of this disputed finish. It wasn't like a double pin or something like that. It was Rob Van Dam pinning the guy. But they had the fake ref, Paul Heyman was ref, the ref bump, that sort of thing.
Right.
I would not have expected that the title change would have been upheld, and Rob Van Dam would go into Raw with the belt on Monday and leave Raw with the belt on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in approximately, what is it?
As soon as we're off the air, WWE starts.
As soon as we're off the air, Sci-Fi starts. And for all I know, we could have a title change on that show.
It's possible, yes.
Or the only other thing I was thinking was you could do the three-way at Vengeance, Edge, Cena, and Rob Van Dam for the belt, and then have Cena pin Edge, so Rob never lost a title. He can claim he's still the champion. They split off that way. And Cena gets his belt back, so...
Yeah, as I was going through news today, I saw a headline that said, spoiler, WWE title will be, you know, this will be decided tonight, what's going to be done with it. If there's a controversy, if there's not, the fate of the WWE title will be decided tonight at One Night Stand. I did not click on it because I don't like spoilers, and I don't like spoiling it for myself. So I'm going to find out when everybody else finds out on ECW tonight. And that's just the way I like to do it.
Sure.
Also, well, that wraps up ECW's One Night Stand. And the final tally was 2 points for myself and 2 points for Les.
We tied. Wow.
It's like kissing your sister. But I thought I had it all figured out.
I'd rather tie than kiss my sister, to be honest.
I thought I had the whole One Night Stand figured out, and I'm so smart, and I know what's going to happen. And it didn't turn out that way. It was a lot of surprises,
yeah.
So, which is good. I like that. I like when things don't actually go my way. It makes it more interesting. Last night, of course, on Raw, you saw a history-making event.
The return of DX?
No. The first ever Wet n' Wild match, baby.
Woo! You know, I was trying so hard to block that out of my mind. Here's the way I looked at it. I was like, okay, you got two girls out there in white T-shirts, and it's a wet and wild match. They're going to get all wet.
Oh, yeah.
We better be able to see something.
Yes.
We didn't.
We did not. They were wearing bras.
What we saw was a horrific, horrifyingly bad match that I will never forget. It was so terrible and so awful that, I don't know, that killed me.
I am actually looking forward to not having to see the girls tonight.
Well,
I'm trying to put this mildly, but yeah, that match was pretty bad, and I was actually scared for those girls' welfare out there because they were slipping around a lot, and I was waiting for some twisted ankles, and I was waiting for somebody to fall down. Candace almost fell down a couple times, but you know, I was jesting about about the Wet and Wild match. Of course, DX reunion.
I do have to say though, going back to that match, I was worried as well about the ring being all wet because the girls have had a horrible year.
Mm-hmm.
Ashley got injured. Beth Phoenix broke her jaw. Trish had the arm injury.
Yes.
And it was like, oh, my God, they're setting up for number four here.
Yes.
And they didn't.
Mm-mm.
And I'm not actually sure how they got the ring dry for the next match and nobody else got hurt.
They held on to it. I think they put a tarp over. I couldn't really tell, and I really didn't have time to go back and look, but I think they had a tarp over the ring so they could just, you know,
yeah, that
grab
makes
it
sense.
Out of there. Quickly, your thoughts on DX reforming, and then we'll get to Mean Gene here.
Well, I will say that I thought the reunion last night worked great. Everybody loved it when they high-fived, so from that perspective, it was a big success. Today I watched the press conference with DX, where they were trying to act like the 1997 DX, despite the fact that it's 2006 and they're both 40 or near 40.
Yeah.
And boy, did that not work. So we shall see how the next week and a half is going to come across, but that I'm not so sure about it now. But Monday was a success, I will say that.
Yeah, it was a good one, and I'm looking forward to ECW tonight. John Cena is going to be in the house, and we're going to find out what's going to happen with the title. I want to remind everybody before we go to break, check out the debut of Combat Fighter Zone Radio. It's at MMANews.com. Of course, guest is going to be UFC President Dana White, and that's this Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern on MMANews.com. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Mean Gene's in the house. You're listening to Wrestling Weekly with Doc Young and Brian Alvarez tonight. Stick around. You don't want to miss what's coming up.
Wrestling Weekly will return to all the fun right after this.
What are you doing? You having fun?
I'm having a blast.
He considers himself God's gift to wrestling, and millions of his faithful agree. With nearly 4 hours of footage and exclusive commentary and matches, this DVD chronicles Daniel's rise from Chicago's Windy City Wrestling to the Asylum in Nashville, and finally to the top of TNA. TNA Home Video presents Heaven Sent, Hell Bound, The Best of Christopher Daniels. Available at most retailers and TNAWrestling.com.
Here's the latest news and information on total nonstop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip is just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, The Best of Raven, Enigma, The Best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, The Best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
You know I got you. Yeah. One, break the wall. Yeah.
Hey, do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out obsessedwithwrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, but an obsession, check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
Hi, my name is Adam Nadelman, but I play the Phantom on the radio. I'm here to remind you that, oh, screw that, my book, Mysteries of Wrestling South, is available at finer bookstores everywhere. That stupid fake voice, I hate it. I wrote a book along with Sir Adam Kleinberg called Mysteries of Wrestling. It has the questions that you wanted answered. Why does Steve Austin hate Jeff Jarrett? Are referees really blind and stupid and dumb? Who is actually the toughest wrestler in the business outside of the ring? Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Kamala. We get down and dirty with insider facts you've never read about anywhere else. So what are you waiting for? It makes a great stocking stuffer. You're too short, you buy three of them, you get tall, you just stand on them. Mysteries of Wrestling Solved by ECW Press, written by Sir Adam Kleinberg and Adam the Phantom Nadelman. Available everywhere. It's done. The plug is done. I'm done. I didn't sell it well enough. There's naked pictures of China in there. Okay? Thank you.
Doc Young and Brian Alvarez filling in for Les Thatcher tonight on Wrestling Weekly. Well, it's about time for our main guest. He is, of course, one of the greatest wrestling interviewers of all time and a real history maker. Mean Gene Okerlund is on Wrestling Weekly tonight. Gino, thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
You know, you obviously have heard my play-by-play, or you would have introduced me as one of the greatest play-by-play voices of all time.
This is one of the greatest voices of all time, and that takes me to my first question. When you were a teenager, was there anything else that you wanted to do besides broadcasting with that voice?
Well, I gave a couple of thoughts to investment banking. I was thinking about buying a major trucking line in Canada. And when I couldn't quite make it through my freshman year of college, I kind of reverted back to radio.
Yeah.
And that worked out real good.
Well,
did you always sort of have the radio voice? Or was it something where when you started announcing, you began to develop it, and now years later, it's just that's how you are?
No, to tell you the truth, everybody in my family kind of had, that kind of a voice. I don't know, I wouldn't say my mother was a voiceover gal, but... you know, she had a great set of pipes, and my brother was a play-by-play guy, owned radio station, so that's kind of how I snuck in the back door, if you will, and I think you kind of hone your skills over the years, but back in the 60s, the mid-60s, when I got into radio, it was kind of a voice thing, so you did the Cup Deer, the Gary Owens, hello, that type of thing.
All right. What kind of jobs did you start out with in radio? Did you ever have to do like country music or something that you didn't like?
I don't think there was anything about radio, Doc, that I didn't like per se because, you know, it's really kind of an exciting medium. You don't have to rely on a bunch of cameramen, floor men, directors, producers. You're kind of a one-man show. And that's what I like, to have the control of what you're doing and not worrying about somebody else screwing up the program. And that is the theater of the mind. There's no question about that when you talk about radio because you can paint a lot of pictures and do a lot of things that are very exciting and you kind of develop the product totally on your own.
Absolutely. War of the Worlds is a big example of that.
I never knew Orson Welles, but I understand he liked to have a cocktail so he couldn't be a bad guy.
Absolutely. So I want to get to my next question. You were honored this year at WWE's Hall of Fame. I mean, what was the night like for you?
Tell you the truth, it was a very, very exciting night. I didn't think it was going to be, but once you get there and you kind of get the feel of it, Bret Hart was there. Hogan and myself were in the back room. We kind of talked things up. Blackjack Mulligan and Blackjack Lanza, along with Bobby Heenan, of course, are my favorites. Tony Atlas, what a refreshing guy he is today in 2006, as opposed to the guy I knew in 1986, 20 years ago. But first-class guy, and everybody on that card, as they would say, at the Hall of Fame, good people, and really enjoyed getting together with them, and I think it is a distinct pleasure for me to be in that hallowed hall, wherever the hell it is.
Yes,
as far as guys that have been inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, and even guys that are currently under the Legends contracts, are there any guys that you feel have been overlooked by WWE as far as getting those contracts or being inducted into the Hall of Fame?
Oh, I think there are. They're probably too numerous to mention, but the only thing I can tell you there, Brian and Doc, is I think their day will come. If they're deserving, ultimately, and the Hall of Fame is going to be a big part of the WWE in the future. I look forward to hosting that thing next year. And the guys that I think belong there are going to be there. I mean, we got the Sarge, Sergeant Slaughter. We've got Jesse Ventura, Roddy Piper. Hogan went in last year being presented by Sylvester Stallone. But, I mean, you can go back. Pat Patterson, the Grand Wizard. There's a guy like right now that probably has a little heat with Vince McMahon Jr. by the name of Bruno Sammartino. And I could tell you, I feel Bruno needs to be in the WWE Hall of Fame.
If you were Vince, would you just induct him whether he agreed to show up or not?
No. No, I think Bruno has to play ball. He's got to grow up. I mean, here's a man that's in his 60s, and he's got to get that chip off his shoulder. The business isn't today what it was 20, 30, or 40 years ago, and it's only a pipe dream. But let me tell you something. The business today is much more successful wall-to-wall than it has ever been. With the distribution, the global, you know, exposure, I think it's just really at the pinnacle right now. I can't see it getting too much better. Where do we go? To Mars? It's kind of a strange
thing.
Actually,
tonight we might with the Sci-Fi Network.
Yeah.
Well, we could do that, too.
We might see some vampires out there. Stevie J in the chat room, he wants to know if you've seen any wacky shenanigans backstage at the Hall of Fame.
Well, I did. I don't think I can talk about it. I think Blackjack Lanza might have put a move on Sensational Sherry. But then I think she might have put a move on him, too. But that's the only shenanigans backstage that I saw. I kind of had a feeling, though, there was a little static in the air between a Hogan and a Bret Hart, between a Hogan and a Stone Cold Steve Austin. Mm-hmm. And I was there. You really couldn't, you know, put a finger on it, but you could feel it. It was there. And I think there is some legitimate heat between some of these guys because, as you know, Hogan probably was not the greatest talent in the ring. Some question his work and work ethic, but by God, he put asses in seats, and I think that's the name of the game right there.
You actually mentioned Blackjack, the Blackjacks, and a couple of years ago, Lanza inducted Bobby Heenan. And I believe Heenan was not happy with that induction.
Well, I got a feeling maybe that the boys might have been smoking something in the back room there because Jack kind of wondered a little bit during that presentation. But let me tell you something about Blackjack Lanza. He is a first-class guy from the A to the Z, as the Iron Sheik would say. And he and Bobby are very close. They have been very close over the years, which now is probably just about covering four decades. They've been very close. And if Heenan got a little hot, maybe that might have been a little bit of a work on his part. Because, as you know, Bobby Heenan, even suffering from throat cancer and some major surgery and radiation and everything. He has trouble with his speech, but he can still communicate.
And he did the induction this year.
He did indeed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's a stitch. This guy, I can sit down and have a cocktail with him, and he'll entertain you for hours. Time flies when you're sitting along with Bobby Heenan.
Are you really good friends with Hogan outside of wrestling, or is it just that chemistry that shows?
You know, I have been very close with Hogan on and off through the years, but you know, he kind of goes in spurts. He had that Thunder in Paradise thing, and that consumed a lot of his time. Obviously, now Hogan knows best on VH1 or VH2, whatever it's on. Consumes a lot of his time, and his family, quite honestly, at this stage of the game, consumes his time. So I don't know how much time he has for a Mean Gene Okerlund, a Nasty Boy Brian Knobbs, a Brutus the Barber Beefcake, or a Bubba Love Sponge, but I still talk to him and communicate with him probably on a weekly basis, which is pretty good for me and him, considering what he's going through.
Right, absolutely.
He just moved to Miami. I don't know if you're aware of that or not. But
Yes. We had Jimmy Hart on a couple weeks ago. He's talking about his new house. It is just beautiful.
Oh, my God. For $12 million, what the hell do you expect? You're not playing with sheep here, boys.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Shockage in the chat room has a question. He says, please describe your final weeks with WWF in 1993. What led to your jump to WCW, and how did it feel to leave your longtime colleagues like Monsoon, Heenan, and Lord Al behind?
It was a very tough decision, but you know what, guys? We all need to do some things during our careers, and change has never hurt me. Eric Bischoff had just hooked up with Ted Turner and Bill Shaw down in Atlanta, and they put Jesse Ventura to work down there as a color analyst. And that was for a truckload, an 18-wheeler, if you will, full of money. And I could kind of smell that green. And the pressures in the WWF at that time were pretty strenuous. One would have to put in a good, honest 90-hour week. And I just kind of felt at that juncture that I probably wanted to take a little break, a breath of fresh air, smell the coffee, and try the change, and you know what? I think it worked out for the best.
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah, because we proved some things in WCW, and I still, to this day, absolutely love Vince McMahon because Vince took care of me. It was my decision in the end to make the move, and I think it was better for their company and better for me as an individual, and it worked out that way.
During the Monday Night Wars, were you bothered by the Scheme Gene character?
Not at all. Hell, if they're doing that to you, if they're doing the impersonations or the knockoffs, that's got to be flattering.
One of your trademarks was the ability to, I guess, carry guys in interviews. Guys that weren't necessarily great speakers could somehow still have a great interview with you. I mean, how did you go about interviewing guys that had glaring weaknesses in their ability to speak?
Well, let me say this. I think you give them the right kind of build-up, so by the time they open their mouth, they are kind of jacked up. But I always felt that during the course of an interview, it was very important, and you guys know this because of what you're doing, Brian and Doc, to listen. I don't care if I was listening to Sean Waltman, the 1-2-3 kid. By the time he stumbled through 2.5 minutes, I would say something to the effect of, you know something, kid? You're a breath of fresh air in this canned industry with all the cliches. I like what you're doing. 1-2-3, kid, thank you very much. And that was it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Here's a question from Heel 2006. He says, who do you think is the biggest name in wrestling history to date? Hogan, Austin, or Flair?
Well, you know what? They should really be up on that pedestal together because Ric Flair, unlike Lex Luger, Ric Flair is really the total package. I mean, this guy was great behind a camera, behind a mic, and he was absolutely sensational in the ring. On the other hand, I think you've got to admit that Hulk Hogan is probably the most charismatic athlete that has ever put on a pair of tights and boots and entered the ring. And let's face it, this guy came as a weightlifter, power lifter, and a bass player in a rock band, and kind of morphed himself into one of the greatest things that wrestling ever seen. Was it a case of him being in the right place at the right time? I guess we could say that, but the fact is, he was there.
I was watching the Hall of Fame video package that they did for you, and there were some blooper clips. I guess the first question is, how many times, what do you think the worst experience was as far as how many times you had to do a take for a certain interview because something just kept going wrong?
Well, I would have to address that this way. It was down in Nashville, Tennessee, and after the show, I don't recall if it was a Saturday night's main event or if it was a Superstars of Wrestling, but I think it was a pay-per-view, and something big happened, and it probably because it was so many years ago, it's kind of disappeared from my mind, and also perhaps because it was kind of an unpleasant experience. I spent 4 hours and did 38 takes with the Ultimate Warrior.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
And even after 38 takes, I didn't have a Chinaman's clue of what the hell this guy was talking about. No offense to my good friends from either Taiwan or the Republic of China.
Right.
What would you say would be the most legendary live blooper that you were ever involved with?
Now, come on, guys. You know better than that.
I was not going to bring that up.
Yeah. No, and that's true, and I think we addressed that at the Hall of Fame. Certainly I did it with the show that I did with Roddy Piper up in Bellingham, Washington. That was very accidental. Rick Rude, who was managed by Bobby Heenan, was coming out for the interview. And that particular night, he was going to be facing the Ultimate Warrior for the Intercontinental title at SummerSlam in the Meadowlands. And we had a backdrop that we used to do these interviews for. Of course, they put up these elaborate sets today. But on the other hand, they could also be shooting them against sewer pipes, so who knows.
Right.
But the backdrop came down, and all I could say is, what the F was that? And we went on. We did cut 2, 3, 4, all on tape. But when the tape guy queued it up that night to insert it, a pre-tape, insert it into the live show, he got the wrong cut, and guess what went on the air?
Wow.
Oops.
And here's the real crowning blow on this thing. Vince was not doing the play-by-play that at that time. I believe it was Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura. And Vince got on the headsets. And Jesse, you just heard what Gene said. Cover for him.
Right.
What do you think Jesse Ventura would say? Leave it up to somebody like that foul-mouthed Okerlund.
Oh, my God.
He just buried my ass.
That's a hell of a cover right there.
Yeah, right. But you still got to like Jesse. He's a guy, by the way, that kind of crowned me with the moniker of Mean Gene. So even though I was never nuts about it earlier on, it's something that I think has kind of stuck to the wood through the years.
Yeah, I was actually going to get to that because you don't seem mean at all.
Well, I'm not mean at all. As a matter of fact, I try to be very articulate and a very controlled individual, and certainly not mean. I'm not out to bust somebody's balls. But where that came up with Jesse Ventura, Jesse would come out with the boa and with the crazy hats and tie-dyes and all that. You know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And he said, you're never going to believe who I was partying with last weekend. And I said, Jesse, I probably wouldn't. Why don't you fill me in? And he said, I was partying with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that's very impressive. He
yeah.
says, you do know who Tom Petty is. And I said, of course I do. He's the famous race car driver. And that's when Jesse said, you're mean, Gene. And that's where it all started.
Ah, I see. That's good. I think I asked you this question already. Let me get to another one. Are you surprised of the crowd reaction that Hogan still gets over 20 years later after the Hulkamania era?
Not at all. Not at all. Because you know what? This guy could live forever. He's always had constant television exposure. When he's not around too much, he is very, very much a crowd favorite. Because I recall in the days, both in the WWE and WCW, when he was supposed to be the babyface, but the fans didn't like him. And they let you know about it.
Oh, yeah.
We did a show called Tuesday Night Titans that I took over for Vince McMahon. And Hogan and Paul Orndorff were running an angle at the time. And it was a very strong angle. I liked Orndorff. And, of course, Hogan was a very huge babyface. But during that run, everything turned around, and all of a sudden, Orndorff became the babyface, and Hogan became the heel. And try as they would like to shove it down the fans' throat that Hogan was going to be the babyface, he would not prevail. And I think you see a little bit of that today. I think some of the fans had a feeling not too long ago that John Cena was probably being put over by The Office.
Yes.
That Triple H might have been being put over by The Office. And you know what? They retaliate. Better that both of them should be heels and be over. That's my thought.
We talked a little bit before we came on the air about your restaurant. You've got one in Bellingham. How are Mean Gene Burgers doing?
We have one in Mount Vernon.
Mount Vernon.
But let me just kind of clue you in here. I can't say a whole lot about it because I don't know if you're aware of it, but there is litigation
yes.
that is currently underway, and I'm going to be going into court next Monday in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where this corporation was formed. Citicorp, Gateway, a lot of the corporations form in South Dakota because they get financial support after they employ 20 or more people. And obviously we're going to be employing 20 or more people.
All right.
But I terminated my contract with Orion Food Systems on March the 8th. And what I'm going into court for is to get my name back because they now contend that they registered the trademark. But I am a living person, and if I have not signed off on it, you can't do it, guys. That's
right.
the way it is. But let's let the court decide that. But suffice to say, we still have got about 250 Mean Genes around the country and more to come. And I'm really excited about this little venture.
So you plan to stay in the restaurant business?
Oh, definitely, definitely. The product is too good not to.
Dingo in the chat room wants to know, who's the funniest wrestler that you've ever interviewed?
Oh, my God. I would have to say, you know who was a great one was Pat Patterson and Ray Stevens. I mean, they used to pull ribs on you on camera. Pat Patterson always had this great line. He says, you know something, Okerlund? If you ask me one more question like that, I'm going to buy this television station. I'm going to buy it, I'm going to take it over, and you're the first man I'm going to fire.
Yeah.
Of course, I always enjoyed that, but you know who my sentimental favorite is, and that's Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
Absolutely blew me away. And our interaction in the latter stages of the AWA era, I think there was a great chemistry there. And the early part of the WWF, when he came into Madison Square Garden, and we would do that weasel gimmick, he would crack me up because he was so animated, so quick. And, of course, nothing was written. We didn't have writers. We kind of did it on the fly. We did it by the seat of our pants, and it all worked out pretty good.
Has there anybody that you interviewed during the backstage or been in contact with that you were legitimately scared of?
Well, I think there were in the course of Ludwig, and I can't think of the guy's last name.
Ludwig Borga.
Ludwig Borga.
Yes.
I have no idea where the hell they got this guy from, but he was a little haywire. Tony Atlas, who might have been on supplements in you know, kind of like Barry Bonds.
Sure. Milk.
And he get a little rage.
Super
Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Oh, my God. He could go haywire on you.
Wow.
He'd pull the beard right off his face.
Yes.
But for the most part, I had a pretty good comfort level with the guys, and I would expect in the environment that we were in, they would act as professionals and, you know, no BS. But there were a few people that you never really knew which way they were going to go.
How are things going with WWE 24/7?
I think they're doing very well. I don't know if you're aware of the fact they just picked up Cablevision, and I think Time Warner and Comcast are the next to come along. And once that's done, guys, it is all over. It's all over but the shouting and the 75,000 hours purportedly that Vince McMahon has acquired, then all of a sudden is going to be like Ted Turner's billion-dollar purchase of the Warner Brothers library. It is going to be worth absolutely millions and millions of dollars. And you know what? I think that's justified because it's some good stuff. If they can clean up the quality, reproduce it, digitally correct it, whatever they need to do, you're going to see some great stuff. And I don't want them to lose the play-by-play guys like Lance Russell, like my good friend, the late, great Gordon Solie, and some of the guys out of the West Coast, the East Coast, that, you know, just kind of made that product. If you take a look at Jack Brickhouse and the original Dumont Network out of Chicago at the Marigold Ballroom, that's classic stuff. I don't care if it's on film or not. Let them convert it. Let them put it through the kinescope or whatever the gimmick happens to be, and let the fans today enjoy the world of yesterday because it was a great, great era, truly.
I got to ask this. The final days of WCW, when did you know the whole thing was going under? I mean, was it a couple of weeks before? Was it the day of the simulcast? When was it?
I had talked to, well, I knew about it before the simulcast. Hell, I wasn't even there. And I had probably known about that 3 or 4 months before it actually happened. They tried to sell that to a guy by the name, I think, Brian Bedall and Eric Bischoff. Mm-hmm. And they had a big price tag on it of nearly $100 million. And when that thing kind of fell through and Turner Broadcast Systems or Time Warner let it be known that they didn't want anything to do with wrestling, including the clearance of time, the WCW label and what it meant, that brand was toast. It was history. And as a result, Vince McMahon bought it for Chiclet wrappers. I think that's what he paid for it, Chiclet wrappers.
Basically, yeah. No TV, no promotion.
Exactly.
Did you think, I guess, years prior, maybe the 80s or 90s, did you think the day would ever come where Vince actually would accomplish his goal and own everything?
Well, I think Vince would probably even tell you today he would probably hope that he wouldn't own everything and he wouldn't have any competition. Because you know what? Competition is what made this guy. You know, he kind of broke the mold initially when he started to go coast to coast, first of all, and cable television all of a sudden exploded. But he and syndication went to virtually every market in the country. Mm-hmm. And it got bigger and bigger leading up to WrestleMania 1. And, of course, by that time he was over the hump and guys were selling out right and left to him. I feel real bad that Vern Gagne didn't cut the deal because Vince was in my office in downtown Minneapolis when he called Vern, and I heard him make the offer. I'll give you $10 million, and I'll give you and your kid a job for the next 5 years at X number of dollars. But in the meantime, Vern tried to chase Vince McMahon, and he was throwing good money after bad. And he ultimately ended up losing a fortune somewhere estimated between $30 and $35 million. I think that's a shame because I think Vern Gagne was a hell of a guy. He just wanted to fight the fight till the end, and he did.
Yes.
did you have complete confidence going into WrestleMania 1? Because that was a make-or-break show for Vince McMahon. If the show had not been a success, that could have crippled the company. And it ended up being a huge success, and the rest is history. But were you concerned going in that there was a possibility that this might flop?
Brian, let me confide in you. It wasn't a make-or-break deal. I mean, if it would hurt the company, it'd be detrimental to the future of the company. It would have fallen flat on its ass. That would have been the end of it. You know, Vince McMahon had gone bankrupt before. He went bankrupt with Evel Knievel trying to shoot him, tied a rocket to his rear end and tried to put him across the Snake River up in Oregon or
yep.
Idaho. And he lost whatever he had at that time. Then the Cape Cod Coliseum, he got talked into a semi-pro hockey team up there. And, of course, they play hockey from October through March, and people go to the Cape from April or May through September and October. So it was a great idea, but there's nobody there. And that cost him. He was living, when I first met him in 1983, in a rented home in Greenwich, Connecticut. He used Eddie Cohen's credit card to get a rent-a-car, and it was really very nip and tuck. And I got to give him all the credit in the world, because you know what? He believed, and he had the ability to put it together. And I would never blow smoke up this guy's rear end. Everything that he has today, he deserves. And let's face it, for the wrestling fans, he's provided a hell of a product now for 25 years.
I have another question for you that comes from the chat room. It says, I was very disappointed to see that you and Howard Finkel were not used for the recent Saturday night's main event. Would you like to resume your duties on TV as lead interviewer, or are you pleased working with WWE 24/7?
Well, no, but I think that I definitely should be part of Saturday night's main event. There's another one coming up, as you know, in the month of July. I don't think the ratings were fantastic, but you know what? I think a little bonding of the old and the new, and the old backstage interviews, not something that's scripted. You got a camera there, you got a microphone. Let's talk turkey, guys. I want to ask you about this. I want to put you on the spot, and it doesn't come from a writer. It comes from the talent.
Absolutely.
And by the way, just a little footnote on that. I've expressed that to both Vince and to Kevin Dunn, who is the executive producer, and I always had a great relationship with the chairman of NBC Sports, Dick Ebersol, because we did the old Saturday night's main event with him.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see my rear end be back there next month, and I'm not too sure that won't happen.
Oh, that would be great. I'd love to see that. Rhode Island Red says, what was it like to host TNT with Lord Alfred Hayes, and what do you remember most about being on the show?
Well, of course, I think that thing was going down the tube. Vince usually didn't assign anything over to me unless he had eyes to take it off the air. But for the 6 or 8 months that I did it, I thought it was a stitch. And we could do everything. We'd have cocktails before we went on the air. And Lord Alfred, the late, great Lord Alfred, God bless him, was a great friend of mine, and I always enjoyed his very dry humor. I mean, we had bears crapping in the studio with Nikolai Volkov. We had, the Iron Sheik there with the camel. Akhtun!
Here's another question from the chat room. What did you think when you first heard about the Gobbledygooker character, and what did you think of the initial reaction it received from the fans at SummerSlam?
I knew, Doc, you'd have to bring that up. Roddy Piper and myself were out in Portland, Seattle recently, and we chatted about that because Roddy was there at the time, too. But, oh, my God. I kind of wonder if something didn't go amiss there. The Gobbledygooker came in. Who the hell could ever possibly think of a knockoff San Diego chicken coming out of this giant egg at Thanksgiving? And I think it was in Hartford, Connecticut, and I believe it was the Survivor Series.
Yes.
Yes.
I didn't have a clue. I was thinking, my God, I'm glad I don't have any part of this. But then all of a sudden, Then said, you got to get in the ring with the gobbledygooker, put him over, do crisscrosses with him. And I said, what the hell are you talking about? I'm an announcer. I don't do crisscrosses. And God bless Hector Guerrero, because, you know, Eddie's brother, older brother, still around today, by the way, school teacher, but a great guy. That was probably the biggest disaster I was ever involved with. And I really felt bad afterwards, especially after I'd fallen down and bruised three ribs, which hurt more than broken ribs.
How far in advance did you know that a chicken was coming out of the egg? Was this something known weeks in advance, or was this something where Vince just sort of didn't let anyone know, and it was a surprise really for everybody?
Well, if it was a rib, it was a hell of a rib, because I didn't know anything about it in advance. I didn't even have a clue or think that I was going to be part of it. And Lord knows, as good as I may think I am, there was no way that I could save that angle. It was a horrible angle. The fans hated it. They were throwing tomatoes, potatoes, bra straps, everything. Jock straps, who knows? Bar stools, barmaids, all of that.
I know that your time is precious and you have to leave real soon, but I wanted to get to a couple more questions before you get out of here. One of them is that one of my favorite Mean Gene lines is from the movie Ready to Rumble. When you said, do people think I'm sexy?
Well, of course, we did have a few cocktails going there that night.
You actually looked like you had a couple.
Yeah, right. Well, I think that was also part of the deal.
Right.
But Oliver Platt was next to me. A great guy, by the way. I think you'd like him. Arquette, all of those guys, Scotty Kahn, all of them that were on the set for that movie, which was painful for me because I spent 41 days at the Hyatt in downtown Los Angeles to do that. It wasn't exactly Academy Award winner.
Right.
But the line, I guess, probably, if I looked at it once I sobered up, yeah, was kind of a funny line. I don't know if I was going to get some action from one of the Nitro girls or Rose McCowan or what was going to happen.
Oh yeah.
Maybe Catherine Freeman, the old cougar that was on there.
Yeah.
Well, you had quite the deal with Pamela Paulshock.
Oh, and I liked her. I liked her. But you know the strange thing about Pamela, and they kind of brought her in, I think, maybe to replace me in some of this, but Pamela. A lovely, very attractive, good-looking, and personable young lady. But somewhere in there was a lot of air. So,
done.
I would talk to her about the business and about what she was going to do. And I don't think today, if you talk to her, she would have any clue why she was there.
Right.
Except for...
the obvious.
You know.
Sure.
You know, Daddy.
Yes.
One last thing. One of the most, shocking and memorable moments in wrestling history was the night Hulk Hogan turned heel. Did it shock you that people were so upset that they started to throw things in the ring? Because that hadn't been seen for a while before that.
No, it hadn't, but you have to admit it had a huge impact. I was in the ring at the time with Hogan, and I believe it was Scott Hall, Kevin Nash. I don't know if there was somebody else in there, Randy Savage or whatever the case might have been. But I got nailed right on the bridge of the nose with a half full can of beer.
Oh yeah, I heard that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so in the meantime, when I was holding the microphone talking to Hogan. And he was burying everybody and the fans and the vitamins and the saying the prayers and all that BS. I was bleeding like a stuffed pig.
Mm.
But I think it did have a very big impact. And I think that whole NWO angle is what turned the tide at WCW. After that, it was a whole new ball game.
Absolutely, really was. Mean Gene, I know you got to get going. God, I wish you could stay for an hour, 2 hours, but
I'd love to do that, guys. But I've got a half mile to the men's room.
Hopefully, we can have you back again sometime soon, and
good luck to you and WWE 24/7, and I hope to see you back on Saturday night's main event.
Well, I hope to be there, and hopefully we can see some of the guys like Heenan, Hogan, Piper, and some of the old-timers kind of, integrated in with the current talent. I think it would be a great idea.
Thank you, Mean Gene. And I got to say that, you know, I feel really bad not doing this interview. You were so articulate, and I feel bad that I'm not wearing a suit while I'm interviewing you.
I'm sitting here naked. You got to remember where I'm at. It's 10 after 9.
That's true.
I'm sitting in my birthday suit. I've got a little glass of very fine Rothschild wine. It's a very nice but very light Bordeaux, not a heavy one. And I've had a great time with you guys. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Gene.
We'll see
you soon.
Work it.
Me, Gene Okerlund, here on Wrestling Weekly, guys. I love that man. He's crazy, Brian.
And he got to work it in there before he left.
He got to work it in there. I love that. We are going to take a quick break, guys. When we come back, of course, we've got a pre-recorded interview from this afternoon. It was a TNA press conference with Kevin Nash. We're going to air that in its entirety. And then, of course, ECW on Sci-Fi Channel right after that. So you're listening to Doc Young, Brian Alvarez. We'll be right back. We'll introduce the Kevin Nash segment right after this on Wrestling Weekly.
Here's the latest news and information on total nonstop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip is just one click away. Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, the best of Raven, Enigma, the best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, the best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
Hey. Do you find that wrestling is more to you than just a passing fancy? Do you need to know more about your favorite wrestler? Do you absolutely have to know all about their history? You, my friend, aren't just passionate. You're obsessed.
Geez, you know, that information might have been a little more useful to me yesterday.
We have a fix for that.
Throw me a frickin' bone here. Need the info.
Check out ObsessedWithWrestling.com. All the info you need to know about everyone. Located at www.obsessedwithwrestling.com. Histories, title info, bios, aliases, real names.
Once again, things that could have been brought to my attention yesterday!
If wrestling isn't just a passion, but an obsession, check out www.obsessedwithwrestling.com today.
Doc Young and Brian Alvarez back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. We're going to see...
Work it!
Yes, work it, baby.
That's right.
We're going to see... that's got to be an interview of the year contender. Mean Gene really telling it like it is. But we are going to get to the Kevin Nash press conference from this afternoon right now, guys. Going to say goodbye to Brian for now. And Brian did a great job. We had a great interview. And we'll see you back in a few weeks for, of course, Hot Topic. But in the meantime, let them know what you do.
I was just going to say thank you for having me on. Everybody check out F4WOnline.com. Daily news updates, free radio shows. We've got two free radio shows up today, actually. The Adam and Mike Audio Nightmare, if you're a big fan of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts in Japan. That's up there, and of course, the Brian and Vinny show. We talk about the ECW pay-per-view, Raw, Hogan Knows Best, which Gene was talking about a little bit, and a bunch of other stuff as well. That is up there, like I said, daily news, newsletters, tons of stuff, F4WOnline.com.
Work it.
Work it.
All right. We're going to get out of here, guys. Enjoy the ECW
show. I guess they're just going to call it ECW. It doesn't really have a name.
That's
yet.
Right. It's called ECW. Not ECW TV. Not ECW Hardcore TV. Just ECW.
That's right. It starts on Sci-Fi right after this press conference with Kevin Nash. We'll see you guys next week. We've got Dr. Tom Pritchard is going to be in the house, and a special guest. We'll be finding out who that is at WrestlingWeekly.com. So keep checking out WrestlingWeekly.com, and thank you, guys. We'll see you next week. Here's Kevin Nash for you in a pre-recorded interview from this afternoon.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to welcome everybody and thank you for participating. Just a quick rundown from last week's Spike TV Impact. Did a 1.0 rating with the number one ranking in the 25 to 34 male demographics. This weekend, this Sunday, is, of course, Slammiversary, the fourth anniversary, King of the Mountain match, Samoa Joe against Scott Steiner, America was Most Wanted against AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels, Rhino in a handicap match against Bobby Roode and Coach D'Amore, James Gang against 3D, Chris Sabin against today's guest, Kevin Nash. Kevin, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Foreman.
At this point, we can open it up for questions.
Our first question comes from Mr. James Walsh. Mr. Walsh, you now have the floor.
Hi, Mr. Nash. It's good to speak with you.
Good to speak with you.
All right, my first question is, back before Bound for Glory, you unfortunately had some health issues. How are you doing with those today?
Oh, I'm fine. I mean, I think, you know, I went in and got a checkup, and I checked out. I think a lot of it was just the fact that I wasn't sure that I was healthy. My father died really young of a heart problem. I was having some chest pain issues that night, and actually had some rib heads out from another accident. It was just, but I'm fine now.
Well, that's definitely great to hear. That night you were supposed to challenge for the NWA title, which would have completed your trifecta of important titles over the years, which WCW, WWF, and NWA. In the back of your mind, do you still kind of have the hunt for the world championship?
I mean, if it comes around, yeah, but I'm excited doing what I'm doing right now.
Speaking of what you're doing right now, you're wrestling Chris Sabin at the pay-per-view, and you've been on your crusade of sorts against the X Division. I guess my question is more of a smart question than a Mark question, and that is, the Internet fans, or the Internet journalists, in quotations, seem to have a real bias against big men wrestlers, and you're obviously one of them with their smart-ass comments about you. How do you feel about them not understanding the importance of the big man?
It's like anything else. I mean, you know, I think that it's hard for a normal person to identify with somebody that you know, is genetically just bigger and imposing. You know, I don't think that most kids really identify with Shaquille, you know, with Shaq or something like that when they watch basketball. I mean, I think it's easier for a kid to look at Steve Nash, that's, you know, a white suburban kid, to say, if I'm going to emulate somebody, I'd probably be able to emulate, you know, Steve Nash. So, I mean, and on top of that, I think that they say, you know, well, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that, he doesn't do this. Well, if you can go out there and do two or three things and have some charisma and be able to get over, then you don't need to set yourself on fire or do anything else. So, you know, there's a lot of guys in Major League Baseball that have one pitch. It just happens to be a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. You know, and I don't think that it takes away from athleticism. I mean, to move a 7-foot body as well as I move it, it takes a lot more skill than it does to, you know, to move a 5'8" body around.
On Shawn Michaels' Boyhood Dream DVD, he puts over your matches with the big man versus little man theory, and a lot of people are looking forward to this Sunday's pay-per-view against Chris Sabin to see kind of the same thing. Do you think we could see another great match like your matches with Shawn Michaels?
I mean, I was, you know, 10 years younger when I wrestled with Shawn. But Shawn, you know, Shawn had, you know, he taught me some really good psychology. And I think what you have to do is, the reason that I'm really excited about working with Sabin is Sabin can create a lot of movement, and which, you know, it makes, you know, all I have to do is move to his movement, which makes it look like I'm moving 100 miles an hour. So he's a great athlete. He's a talented, really talented wrestler, and he's really coming into his own. And I'm hoping that, you know, we can have a match that stands the test of time.
Is he the only X Division guy you see yourself working with, or are you going to be working with more of them?
I think there's some great talent in there. I think Sanjay's really talented. I watched Jay Lethal the other night against Alec when I was at ringside. I mean, their match was, I mean, it was seamless when I was, you know, at ringside, which is a lot of times you stand ringside, you watch guys on camera work, and then you go, well, they look good. Then you stand ringside, and you go, oh, wow, their stuff looks kind of weak. But their stuff looked tight. I mean, I was really impressed with their match the other night. It only went like 5 minutes, but what I saw was, you know, was impressive.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we can't thank you enough for your time. I'll let somebody else ask questions. Once again, thank you, and I'll see you this Sunday at Slammiversary.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Mr. Richard Jones. We're going to ask that all people in queue to ask questions limit their questions to 1 to 2 questions. Thank you.
All right, Kevin, this is Rich from the Pain Clinic in Rochester, New York. How are you doing today?
Good, how you been?
Oh, does that count as one? No. Just kidding. Any more movies coming out we're going to see in real soon?
DOA comes out August 25th, Dead or Alive. It's okay. Off the video game, yeah.
Anything beyond that?
No, I'm actually, I think I'm going to go up to New York in a couple of weeks and go read for another one.
All right, now, I've noticed a similarity. When 1998 version of Godzilla came out, the tagline was Size Matters. Size also makes a good target. What does Chris Sabin have to do at Slammiversary to get a good match and to beat you?
I mean, to beat me, he'll have to pin me. I guess he's going to have to, I think that when Jim Ross used to call matches with me, he always said the small man, you know, had to withstand the first 7 minutes, and after that it was, you know, the advantage became to the smaller man, and I guess that's pretty much, I mean, I'm going to go out and throw bombs and try to finish it quick. And, I mean, you know, if he can withstand that, then.
Very cool. Now, one more before I let you go. Besides, it seems like you're bringing the best out of Chris Sabin. TNA also has been doing, like, some more house shows recently. Is there a chance we're ever going to see Kevin Nash on the road with TNA?
I mean, you know, if they needed me, I actually said I wanted to wrestle Sabin before this pay-per-view on a house show, but they'd already had the cards booked. So, I mean, I was up to do it. You know, it's not something that I'm against. If it makes sense for TNA and for myself, then I'd be more than happy to help out.
All right. Thanks very much, and good luck.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Mr. Brian Spool. Mr. Spool, you now have the floor.
Hey, Kevin, thanks for joining us. Curious if you could explain why the X Division and the heel turn. Why all that now? You mentioned earlier that if it comes up down the line, you'd be interested in the NWA title again. But why the X Division and why the heel turn?
I've always had more success as a heel anyway. I mean, it's close to my personality. I'm not a baby face in real life. You know, I'm kind of a sarcastic smart ass, so.
And you?
Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of just fits. And the X Division, because, I mean, if I'm going to work with guys, and I'm limited to what I can do now, well, I've always been limited. I mean, size does limit you to some degree in what you can do in there, but I know the formula to have a good match with smaller guys. I've had great matches with small guys. You know, I can dance, but I need a good dance partner. So these guys are probably the best dance partners in the business right now. So if I'm going to go out there and do it, I might as well do it with the best.
Creatively speaking as well as physically speaking, what is similar and what is different about this feud with Chris Sabin and the one that you had with Rey Mysterio years ago?
I think the one with Rey was different in the fact that it was, he never, I mean, it was, there were so many of us, you know, we ran in a pack of guys. I mean, it was, even if he did pin, you know, get you down or something like that. But we started that backwards with Rey. I think I just started booking and what I wanted to do was just try to set a statement that everybody can get beat, mm-hmm. and everybody can beat everybody. So, you know, I wanted to do that. That was the reason for that whole thing was, you know, Rey was an incredible talent. And I don't think that anybody in Sacramento the night that he beat me thought, wow, that was a farce. Because we did it well enough where it looked like, yeah, that's conceivable that he could have pulled that off. This is a storyline and you know, this is going against the X Division, but this is, you know, basically to see if they can stand up. Like I'm saying, they're not, you know, they're not worthy, and they're saying, yes, we are. where it's, you know, it's, I'm basically taking on, you know, the entire X division instead of one individual.
Right. And I guess just one final question. If you could share some predictions as far as the other matches on the pay-per-view, who do you like to win King of the Mountain, and how do you break down Samoa Joe versus Scott Steiner?
Well, King of the Mountain, I mean, I think that, Killian's my, I mean, if I had to pick somebody, maybe Killian's would be like the dark horse in that match. Hmm. He's done it before. But, I mean, I don't know who's going to go over in that. I know champions never regain, so maybe Christian will go over because of that. And then Samoa Joe versus Papa Pump. I mean, I'm looking forward to that. I think, you know, Joe's got an incredible amount of talent. And what they did at the last pay-per-view is, I think they were able to kind of feel each other's, you know, style and stuff, so they should be able to put something together that should be really fun to watch.
All right, cool. Kevin, thanks for your time. I'll let somebody else jump in.
Sure, man.
Our next question comes from Mr. Scott Slimmer. Mr. Slimmer, you now have the floor.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for joining us today.
Scott.
You mentioned briefly that you at one point were booking for WCW. After your in-ring career is over, would you ever consider taking a creative position with TNA?
As long as it was part of a committee, I wouldn't want to be the sole. I think it's impossible in today's business to just have one vision creatively. But yeah, I'd be more than happy. I'd be more than happy to do anything for TNA to help be successful.
Great. And then the second question. You mentioned the big man versus small man matches and how that fits into the X division. Would you ever be interested in taking it to the top of the X division with Samoa Joe, where it would definitely be a different style of match because Joe just doesn't fit that normal X division mold? And how would you approach that?
Well, I mean, I'd be more than happy to work with Joe. I think he's, like I said earlier, he's really talented. I think it no longer becomes a quote X division match. It becomes, you know, Samoa Joe versus Kevin Nash. I don't think that the X division really plays into that as much as it just, you know, it just becomes a match between two guys. With this, I mean, this match here, though, I'm taking on Saban. I think that it correlates more with the X division because I'm basically saying size. Where the thing with Joe is that size isn't an issue with him. So, you know, Joe probably weighs, you know, maybe 10 pounds less than I do.
Okay, my final question. You've been talking a lot recently about big men versus little men in wrestling. And over the past couple of years, we've seen a lot of smaller guys who break the mold of the traditional big man champ becoming world champion. Do you think this is just a fad, or has there been a real shift in what people see as who can be a world champion?
I think it's happened because there isn't any big guys out there to be champion. I just think it's happened because the business has gotten smaller. You know, there's not a whole lot of really, you know, charismatic big men out there that I can think of, and the ones that are still in the business, if they've had the belt enough times where it really doesn't matter, they don't really need the belt to be successful. I mean, Undertaker doesn't need a belt to be successful, he's the Undertaker, and a lot of times, you know, the belt becomes a prop to make somebody, and once you've gotten past the fact that the belt really doesn't make you or break you, then it's kind of stupid creatively to put it on that person too much when you can put it on somebody else and kind of, you know, bring them to that next level.
Okay, thanks a lot for your time today.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Mr. Chad Perry. Mr. Perry, you have the floor.
Hi, Kevin. It's great to speak to you. When you first came into the TNA in November of 2004, you came in with your good friend Scott Hall. Scott was gone from TNA TV, I believe, in January of the next year. Have you talked with Scott lately? And if so, are there any plans of bringing Scott back to TNA?
I've been talking to Scott in a couple of months, which isn't good because anytime I don't talk to Scott, I mean, Scott's probably out doing what Scott does. But I don't think there's any plans on bringing him back right now because I don't think anybody's in any contact with him.
Okay. And do you think that there will be any possibility of course, WWE did it in 2002, was TNA possibly trying to start up a new NWO? And if they did, do you think it would be as big of a failure as when WWE tried it?
When they tried to do it, no. The only reason the WWF NWO angle didn't work, or WWE NWO angle didn't work, was the fact that we came in and they immediately pulled Hulk out of the mix. I mean, it definitely worked because when we came back in, ticket sales went up and ratings went up. And I mean, the thing was, we went to WrestleMania. The original plans were that Scott Hall was going to beat Austin, and we were going to screw The Rock. And we got to WrestleMania, and they changed the finishes where Steve beat Scott, and basically Hogan turned babyface on us. So, I mean, I think it was pretty much they didn't want that to get over, and we couldn't do it at TNA because we don't own the NWO, they own that moniker.
All right. And my final question is, you've worked with a lot of big names over the year, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Jeff Jarrett. Is there one person that you haven't faced yet that you would like to?
I mean, Joe would be one. I think I could. I think that would like to find out what I could do with him. That's off the top of my hand, off the top of my head, but, I mean, yeah, I've wrestled most of the guys, but I haven't wrestled Joe yet.
Okay, and thank you.
Thanks, man.
Our next question comes from Mr. Blackjack Brown. Mr. Brown, you have the floor.
All right, Brother Kevin, how are you?
Blackjack.
My man,
man,
how you doing, man?
Good, man. How you been?
I'm doing great.
Good, man.
I've been hearing some rumors, and I'm always one for rumors. What are the possibilities of Eric Bischoff joining that organization? If that was to be true, how would you handle that? If that had to, if that did come to pass.
Eric's an old buddy of mine.
Yeah, yeah. Mine too.
Yeah, so I mean that would be nothing but good for me because mm-hmm. it would give me a chance to see my friend four times a month. So.
Right.
That would be a good thing. Mm-hmm. And Korean, he's great. He's a great on camera personality, and he's good as far as creatively and adding some to the mix. So, I mean, that would just be a plus all the way around.
Yeah, it would be. So, as I said, for the other journalists out there and internet writers, that's just a rumor. So, just take it as so.
So he may be the face of the pay per view.
Oh, I didn't even hear that one.
Well, I mean, you're saying the rumor. I mean, there's an opening for him there.
Yeah, several rumors then. He was just one of them.
Yeah.
I wasn't even talking about the one for Sunday.
Well, I'm just throwing in the mix. And I don't know. I mean, they've been keeping a pretty tight lip on who that is.
Yeah, that's how they should keep it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, hopefully things are well with the family and everything. And
good, man. My little boy turned 10 yesterday.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, congratulations, and all's well, brother. Peace.
All right. Good talking, buddy.
Okay.
All right, Blackjack.
Our next question comes from Jason Clevelet. Mr. Clevelet, you have the floor.
Hey, Kevin. Jason Clevelet, Slam Wrestling. How are you doing today?
Good, man. How you doing?
Not too bad. My first question is... As a veteran in a relatively young locker room, what sort of influence, it seems like they want to pair up guys like you and Jeff Jarrett and Team 3D and stuff with some of these younger guys in order to not only give them the rub of facing established talents, but also to give them a chance to learn. What do you feel is your role in being sort of the veteran in the locker room?
I mean, to me, to being a veteran in the locker room, it's just to try to, try to give them some kind of insight on. I mean, I think that the younger generation still hasn't learned out that you need to work smarter instead of harder. And a lot of times there's a way to do things where you don't kill yourself that you can get the same bottom line. And I think that's one thing that I watch a lot of these guys work, and thank God that and a lot of these guys work not only the four times we work a month, but they work. Another 10 or 12 indie shows. I know they go out there and just, go to the wall with it. And, I worry that because the style has gotten so crazy that, these guys aren't going to see 30. And that'd be a shame because, there's no reason, you know, for these guys not to, you know, be able to wrestle in the end of the mid-30s and then retire when they want to, instead of when somebody's saying you've got to quit. So I think that that's one thing, is just try to show them that there's different styles besides the one style that they have, and there's times and places to use, you know, the high spots, not to use the high spots. Hopefully extend some of their careers. If I could stop one guy from not getting hurt out there, then I think I'd accomplish a lot.
And my second question is regarding WWE. We saw Shawn Michaels and Triple H reform DX last night. Much like the NWO angle a few years ago, it seems like WWE is trying to delve into the past in order to get a pop or whatever. What are your thoughts on sort of going back to groups like that, especially when the NWO was such a failure for the WWE version? And what do you think of Shawn and Triple H reforming that particular group?
Well, if they do it with the same creative genius that they did the NWO, I'm sure it'll fail. But I think it's going to be interesting because Shawn's a Christian, and Shawn's a very devout Christian, and I don't think that, you know, I mean, if you look at DX and you look at the things they did, I mean, it was pretty risque stuff that they did. A lot of it was very sexual, and I don't see Shawn doing that again, so it's going to be... From a standpoint of Kevin Nash, you know, interest, it'll be that, you know, how are they going to storyline wise be able to pull this off with Shawn's convictions? So I think that's going to be the interesting thing for me to watch.
All right. Well, I'll let someone else grab the floor. Thank you very much, Kevin.
All right, man.
Our next question comes from Wade Needham. Mr. Needham, you have the floor.
Nash, first off, I'd like to say I have a lot of respect for you and what you've done in business up to this point, and I'm a big fan of your work.
You're the only one, brother.
On to my question. The X Division has been described as having no limits. Do you feel that being a man of your size and of your age, that your match with a guy like Saban this Sunday, that you will be limited?
The only thing that limits this match is gravity, how far I can throw him. I mean, that's kind of the way I look at it. And, God, let me think now. It's, you come back and you pick the smallest guy that you can toss furthest. Seems to work as you get older. I am a genius. No, I mean, that's what you do. I've never been able to move like the small guy, so you work against guys. I mean, the worst match for a big guy is like when Big Show wrestled Kane. You got two guys that can't create movement. Kane's much better with a smaller guy. Show's much better with a smaller guy. I mean, that's just the psychology that works for a big man. And anytime, you know, they try to do the big man versus big man match, for most big guys, you're like, oh, man, this is going to be brutal. And you know going into it. The only matches that I really enjoyed as a big man versus big man was Taker, because Taker was very mobile for a big guy. And Taker could, you know, duck and do the big clothesline. And Taker could create the movement that you need to make the match exciting. But besides that, I mean, I think that's, you know, big man versus big man match is pretty much like watching paint dry.
So speaking of that match that you had with The Undertaker at WrestleMania 12, that was a very exciting match, and good work on that one.
Thanks.
Next question. Also, down the road, after you take out the rest of the X Division stars to possibly capture the X Division championship, do you see a possible backlash from the fans on the whole TNA product in a negative way?
I mean, why? I mean, you know, people say, you know, the thing that kills me is people say, you know, well, Nash this, Nash that. And I say, well, if it was a shoot, if this was a complete shoot, would those guys beat me in a match? I don't think they would. I don't think there's anybody in the X Division could beat me in a shoot. So then it's just like, so what are you saying, that we should, because I don't fit your criteria, and you don't personally like me, then therefore, you know, we should not, you know, have it follow, you know, as true to storyline as, but as true to real life as the storyline as possible. We should have you get beat, and you should, you know, give praise to the X Division, and, you know, I just, you know, I don't know. I mean, if there's a backlash, I think so far that this angle has been done right, and it's been done well, and who's not to say that I'm not going to go out and get beat Sunday? I mean, nobody knows what the finish is. I think people need to save judgment until they watch what happens. I mean, so far, I think that I don't think that anybody thought that Alex would be pulled into the storyline. I mean, there's a lot of things that the creatively have been done very well. So I think people need to hold their judgments, watch it, enjoy it or not enjoy it, but just watch it and see. You know,
I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah, I mean, I.
Well, I thank you for your time and hope you have a wonderful day and good luck this Sunday at Slammiversary.
Thanks, man.
Our next question comes from James Lowe. Mr. Lowe, you have the floor.
Silver Fox, Big Sexy the Giant Killer. How you doing, buddy?
What a subject.
Had a couple questions. One being, when you get done conquering the X Division, there's been a rumor that Sean Waltman, Six-Pac, X-Pac, whatever you want to refer to him, has been contacted by Lucha Libre AAA. And I know the AAA does a lot of talent trade with TNA. They did the World X Cup and everything. Would you and Waltman ever consider going down there and punking out a lot of the luchadors?
I mean, if the money's right. I don't think they pay any money down there, do they?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the intangible right there. They're going to come. I'll go wherever the cheese is, but there ain't no cheese. I'm just going to be sitting here watching the waves crash.
Final question on this. With all the talk, there's been some talk earlier in the conference call, and I've seen some things on the Internet about Scott Hall. If TNA really wanted to, would they be able to bring Scott in, you in, Waltman in, and maybe put you guys with Jarrett and maybe have like a heel faction to go up against Sting and the rest of the guys in TNA?
Well, I mean, I've called Scott about six or eight times in the last 4 or 5 weeks, and he hasn't returned any calls, which tells me he's either down in Puerto Rico or, I mean, who knows what he's doing. But it's never a good sign when Scott doesn't call me back.
Yeah.
You know, so I just don't think that he's really a viable entity to do anything with right now, because I don't even know where his head's at.
Yeah, it's too bad. You guys had some great moments back.
Like I'll always say, he's the greatest talent ever to be a world champion.
Yeah. I know that just watching this Alex Shelley thing that you've been doing, it reminds me of the old Louis Spicoli NWO days.
We always like to get us a young boy and smarten him up and see if he can fit into the mix. And I think Shelley's been doing a great job. I think that, you know, he really just needs, because it's there in him. I mean, I see it in him.
Yeah.
Just when I sit and I talk to him, it's just like, you know, it's there, and he's a smart ass. He's sarcastic. When he did when Borash was interviewing me the other day, and he did a little Borash impersonation before you, I mean, I said, man, see, this is the kind of, that's good TV, and this kid, that's the innate quality that he has. It just, he's getting a chance to be with me, and I'm really happy with my partnership with him, and I really don't want to bring anybody in to that. I mean, I want to see how far he and I can develop this. And
I think it'd be great.
Absolutely.
I think if you guys would, like, if you won the X title, and then you guys go on and win the tag belts and just kind of wander around.
Or maybe down the line somewhere, a guy get injured, God forbid, but, you know, I can still bodyguard him, and he becomes the Shawn Michaels, and I become the bodyguard again. He gets a belt, and we get a nice run, and we protect him with it. There's a million variables, you know, storyline-wise to do things, and he's a charismatic. He can work. He can talk. I mean, he can do gaga, he can do it all. So just to me, it's just like, he's a real talented guy. So just like, you know, let's nurture that and let that build, because there's a guy that, I think he's 21 years old.
Yeah, phenomenal talent.
Yeah, so here's a guy that's, I mean, he's not even, you don't even learn to work till you're 28. You know, the old-timers always tell you, you don't learn how to work until you get hurt. And I always thought, what does that mean? Then you get hurt and you're like, wow, you have to work because you can't use your athleticism anymore. So, but, yeah, he's been. I feel like at this point in my career, I'm like Dracula, and I need that young blood around me, you know, to keep me going. So, he's been great for me.
Well, Kevin, good luck this weekend, Slammiversary, and what do you have planned after this? Are you just going to keep doing the exhibition thing? Or?
I think that, you know, the beauty of wrestling is every week you do it, and the next morning you get up and there's kind of an empty canvas in front of you. And that's always been one of the things that has attracted most of us to it, is if something's not working, boy, you can stop and paint a different picture the next day and go a completely different direction. So.
Oh yeah.
This is I'm excited again. You know, I mean, I'm watching wrestling. I'm watching tapes again. It's just, you know, my mind's back into it. So
seems
it's
like
just,
you're having a hell of a lot of time out there.
Yeah, I am. I'm having a good time. I'm having a lot of fun, and it's good to be around these young guys that are so, you know, so passionate, you know, because I remember when I was like that. So it's nice to see that again and to see so much of it, and it's just like, yeah, this is a good place to be.
Well, Kevin, I'll let somebody else take over. You have a good one, and
thanks,
good
man.
Luck this Sunday, man.
Thanks, man.
Our next question comes from Doc Young. Mr. Young, you have the floor.
Thank you, Kevin. This is Doc Young from Wrestling Weekly. How are you?
Hey, good, man. How's Les doing?
He's doing pretty good. He's just getting off from Cauliflower Alley. He should be back in town tonight.
I'll tell him I said hi.
Will do. My question is, if you had the authority and the power to bring one person to TNA, who would you bring?
If I could bring one person to TNA. Wow. I mean, living or dead?
No, I would say living.
I don't know. I mean, the funny as it is that you say that, there's like nobody that I could just figure that you could pick off the street and drop them into that equation that makes it, you know, that much better than what it is.
Right.
I mean, I don't think there's. I think that's the biggest thing right now in wrestling, is there is that one talent out there that's really gonna is really a giant turning factor. You know, there's, you know, Austin's basically not wrestling anymore. I mean, if Steve was healthy, I'd love to have Steve in. Steve's one of my best friends.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a Goldberg.
Yeah, I think that Bill would be great, but. You know, I just don't think that anybody, Bill's banged up, too.
Yeah. My second question is, a lot of people in the last 5 years or so have been coming out with the autobiographies. What's your take on that? Will we be seeing a Kevin Nash autobiography anytime soon?
No, never. My life's personal. Things I did with my friends are, you know, and number one, I got a 10-year-old boy, and I couldn't tell my story and have my 10-year-old boy read it.
Right.
Just
okay.
Couldn't do it, you know. So if I can't be truthful, if I can't tell my whole story, then I can't tell any of my story.
Okay. Well, I'll let you go and let somebody else take over. Good luck this Sunday. Stay healthy.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate the last one.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Our next question comes from Mr. James Gutman. Mr. Gutman, you now have the floor.
Hi, Kevin. James Gutman from World Wrestling Insanity. How are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good, man. I just had one question for you about your feud with the X Division. You talked about creating movement and kind of, you know, masking the shortcomings of different performers. My question for you is, kind of regardless of wherever the feud goes, do you think the mere visual of you at 7 feet tall standing next to a guy whose obvious shortcoming is the lack of height might taint the view that fans have of those people, kind of hard to wash away regardless of where the feud goes?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, you know, size is what it is. It's there. I mean, a wall is a wall. I mean, I think that the thing is the intrigue of just that. Oh, my God, this guy is, he's a giant. He's a true giant. I'm not the 6'5" guy that they say is 7'5". Mm. I mean, I'm actually probably taller than they list me. So I think that the key to intrigue to me has always been matchups. If a matchup doesn't intrigue you, then it doesn't really matter whether the storyline's intriguing or not. If the matchup itself at the end of the day is not intriguing, then there's no reason to watch it. And I think the people will be intrigued to see how this match goes. And that's all you can do is be a part of a card and be, as people look down the card and say, do I want to see that? Do I not want to see it? And be one that they check next to and say, yeah, I want to see that. And that's all you can do to enhance a card. And that's your job as a wrestler. So I think that Saban and I are an intriguing match to see how the psychology, how the physicality, how the athleticism, how those things match up, and then what the outcome is for the finish. And I don't think people, I mean, I'm sure everybody says, oh, Nash will beat him in 30 seconds. This will be horrible. You know? Well, if that happens, then God, it probably will be horrible. I don't plan on having a horrible match. So.
Cool. Fair enough. I appreciate it, Kevin. Thanks.
All right.
Our next question comes from Heather Turk. Mr. Turk, you have the floor.
Hi, Kevin. This is Heather. How are you?
Good, Heather.
Now, you're obviously a very opinionated person, and you feel free to speak your mind, which is great. So today is the return of ECW. I have to ask, what are your thoughts on Vince resurrecting the ECW franchise?
I mean, it's already got such a WWE flavor to it that it's not ECW. I mean, you know, Big Show wasn't in ECW. Cena, I mean, Cena's going to be there tonight. It's too diluted and too... And I think it's going to be at a SmackDown arena, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Yep. Which is going to be it's going to have that slick, overproduced feel of the WWE, which the thing that when I used to watch ECW, when it used to come on the Sunshine Channel here in Florida late at night, was it was in Lowell, Mass, one of them small buildings, and you know they sure didn't have the ECW pay per view at a big slick arena. You know, they had it at a smaller venue, and I think it's a very male-driven 18 to 34 demographic thing, and as one of the boys, I wish it success because it's more chances for guys to work, you know, another place for guys to work, so I wish it success, but I just think that, you know, if they let Paul Heyman creatively do the show, then it'll be successful. If they let the other guys get their hands in and muck it up and overproduce it and make it what it wasn't before, then I don't think it'll work.
Right. Now, you've talked about your little boy who just turned 10, and obviously with TNA, you guys aren't on the road as much as with the WWE, but at this point in your career, obviously there's a lot of speculation before that you were going to retire, and you came back, and now this week you're getting back in the ring again. What is that drive that you continuously feel? Like, what makes you still get in the ring after all these years when obviously, you know, you could stay at home with your family? And
I think it's the fact that you miss performing. I think that you miss... You know, it's one thing to have, you know, to go into a movie and spend 3 months, but, you know, you're only on the set, you know, actually working, like, for the longest yard. I may be shot, you know, 18 days out of 4 months, and that's, you know, and those days you get to go out and you're creative, but it's not the same because it's a stop-go kind of creativity. You shoot for, you know, you do dialogue per minute, and it's cut, and you move the cameras. And this has such a different feel for it because you go out there and you're given 5, 8, 12, whatever it is. It's a continuous, you know, it's a continuous run of just being able to go out there and to try to create something that's entertaining. And you miss that. I mean, you miss that release when you don't have it.
And one more quick question. Going into the pay-per-view this Sunday, are you training any differently this time around? I mean, it's been a while since you've been back.
I've cut down to one bottle of red wine a night. my training regime. But it's either a Camus or an Opus, so it's a good quality red.
Well, thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
All right. Take care.
You too.
Our next question comes from Mr. Jim Barcelone. Mr. Barcelone, you have the floor.
Hey, Kevin. I just wanted to know, did doctors advise you at all to cut back on the wrestling or give you any type of special diet or anything, especially with the scare you had?
No. My doctor, when he got all the tests back, said that, you know, he looked at my blood and everything. He said, you know, your only limitations are work with your orthopedic problems. I said, you know, everything else is fine. You're not going to have a heart attack. So I said, all right, my heart's cool. And I know my body's banked up. I feel it daily. So, but no, my doctor gave me a clean bill of health. My cardiologist did, not my orthopedic guy. My orthopedic guy thinks I'm crazy for still doing this.
The other thing I was going to ask you about was in WCW, you did a program with the Natural Born Thrillers. What is it like, because you worked with that young group, what is it like, is there any comparisons working with them and working with the X Division?
Yeah, there's a lot, because I think that it's funny, because the guys in the X Division, though they're very young, are pretty seasoned, because most of them, I mean, they're like kid was, you know, they broke in when they were like 18, so they've been, you know, at 23, they've been working 5 years, you know, so a lot of them have got a lot of ring time, and it seems like a lot of them work, you know, a lot of the independent circuits against each other, so they, you know, it's like back when the WWF ran, you know, 20 times a month, you'd get with a guy and in the course of 2 months, you'd have 40 matches with him. So you'd have a really good ability to go on TV and pick and choose high spots, psychology and stuff that you had from a huge Rolodex of things you'd done together. I think that's one thing that makes these guys so special, is they all have wrestled against each other so many times. They know each other. They know each other's moves, and they can kind of just go out there and go. It reminds me a lot of when WCW took off in 96, and we had that incredible, you know, they called it the Cruiserweight Division, when we had Malenko and Dragon and Hoovy and Psychosis and Ray and, I mean, Benoit. I mean, then we had, you know, there was, you know, 12, 15 guys that were probably some of the best hands in the world. So it reminds me a lot of that same period. And I think the Thrillers were a lot bigger guys, and Jindrak was 6'6". Yeah, I think maybe Mike Sanders was probably the smallest of the guys. Mike was probably about 6'2 or 3". So, I mean, they were some decent-sized guys.
All right, thank you, Kevin.
All right, man.
Our next question comes from Mr. Brendan Brooks. Mr. Brooks, you have the floor.
Good afternoon, Kevin. How's it going?
Good, man. How you doing?
Doing good. Hey, you've done a lot of movies recently, at least a few that have been pretty successful. Are we going to see Kevin Nash in the upcoming films?
Yeah, earlier, we've got one coming out August 25th, DOA. It's Dead or Alive. Jimmy Presley's my daughter in it. It's like a fighting video game adaptation on film.
And being a father right now, do you see that as a potential post-career from wrestling?
I don't think you can bank on film. I mean, you can do 5 films in 2 years and never work again. It's such a quirky business. I did a couple films early when I first started wrestling, like Ninja Turtles and Free Jack, and, you know, I thought that was going to be an avenue, and then, you know, it was almost 10 years before I did another film. Granted, I was wrestling and doing a lot of things, and I turned down Sabretooth and X-Men because I was you know, in the middle of my run at WCW. But I don't think it's really an option. If you bank on doing movies, I think you're going to just disappoint yourself. I think it's more like a paid vacation. If somebody's going to, you know, if somebody's going to put you in a movie and give you a per diem and put you up and pay you, it's great. If not, you know, I've got enough money saved up where I can't live like a king, but I can live pretty good. I can wake up and look at the ocean every day.
Yeah.
And spend time with my family, so.
That's always important.
Yeah.
Going back, a long time ago, you were one of the second most recruited players from Michigan behind Magic Johnson in your high school years. If, provided, you know, you actually did make it to the NBA, who's one coach that you would love to play under?
Now?
Yeah, well, now, yeah.
Well, I'd either want to play under Avery or Pat Riley, because at least I'd be in the finals.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm sure it'd be Riley. I've read Riley's book. I've always been a fan of Riley's, so I hope they get it turned around tonight.
Okay, cool. Well, one final question before I go. Who's the one guy in the TNA locker room that really stands out from the rest?
In the showers or in the locker room?
No, locker room. With the clothes on, preferably, man.
You know what? I'm really, really impressed with Joe, because Joe's got a lot of talent, and Joe is one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet in your life. He just, every time I see him, he makes me smile. I mean, he's always got a smile on his face. I mean, he's one of the guys that just, he is, I think, will be our poster boy, because he's the kind of guy that you can drop in a mall, drop in an auto place. I mean, you can drop him anywhere, and I think that he's got a, there's a charisma to him. There's the people like him. people are drawn to him, and his work's very good. So I think that he's a guy that if I had to just pick one of them. But like I said earlier, Alec, I think Shelley's. I mean, there's you know, Saban, there's all these guys that, you know, that I'm getting a chance to meet and talk to are very, you know, driven, very level-headed guys that all can be very successful.
Cool. Well, thanks, Lon. Good luck on Sunday, and I hope you stay healthy.
Thanks, man.
Our next question comes from Mr. John Paul.
More like Abyss, the homegrown guys. And stop bringing in WWE pass guys. What's your comment on that?
I think Paul should not have sold out his ECW mark in the first place. And he wouldn't be under the control of the McMahon Empire right now. And we could actually see ECW. So I think that maybe Paul should worry about Paul.
Right. Kevin, can you tell us about your debut as a wrestler and your greatest match? That's all I have for today.
My debut was live on the Clash of Champions against Brad Armstrong and Tim Horner. And my tag team partner did a headbutt off the top and missed by about 5 feet. And in my first match, I actually felt that we lost the crowd, which they say takes you years to know. So,
wow.
Best night ever was probably the night I'd be back when for the my first world title.
95.
Yeah, that was because I mean, when you win your first world title, I don't care if it says it's a shoot.
Right.
That'll work. So I mean, that was pretty special.
Okay, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
All right, man.
There are currently no more questions in queue at this time. Mr. Foreman, I'll turn the call back over to you.
I want to thank everybody for participating, and the four people who had asked for some taglines, Maeve, Doc Young, James Gutman, and James Lowe, if you would stick around, we will get those out. Thank you very much to everybody else.
Y'all get the drugs, the drugs, from my generation, I'll take the fall, the saints, and across the nation, and it's a sin. Yeah. Now get the drugs, the drugs, from my generation.
don't take.